Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. So 2 weeks ago on Friday, I did an episode regarding our declining rights under the Trump administration. I read out a series of articles that had been released talking about what the Trump administration had done, and there was quite a few resources or sources of material to go through there. I should have done this again last week, last Friday, but I didn't think about at the time making it sort of a weekly topic. I think for now it warrants it because things are moving so quickly in the U.S. with the administration's move towards authoritarianism. Now, granted, not every article that I'm going to read today directly has to do with declining rights. They may just be wild news stories that occurred, but for the most part, that is what we're focusing on here. Now, I've got 24 different articles that I'm going to reference. Just thinking about that for 2 weeks, a two-week period, 24, we're talking about nearly two different major news stories per day. And this is just me kind of quickly going through and finding the relevant topics from the last couple of weeks. If I had actually, each day when the thing happened or when the news article came out, if I had chronicled it or put it away, and then tried to hold this episode today, I'd probably have, double the number. So we're just going to go through these pretty quick. Obviously, with 24 of them, I can't spend more than 30 seconds or so on each if we're going to keep this podcast to a normal length. So let's dive in and talk about what's occurred over the last 2 weeks. This is in no particular order. There are, it's just kind of all jumbled together. And so I'm not necessarily talking about them in order of importance or impact. Okay, the first one is titled Trump's NSPM7 Labels Common Beliefs as Terrorism Indicators. This one is huge, folks. I'm not even going to actually touch on it right now at all because I'm doing a full episode on this very topic next week. It goes along with one of the other articles, which was Trump says he's designating Antifa as a terrorist organization. And essentially, combining these two here, the administration has basically said, anyone on the left who disagrees with things that I say as president or the traditional American values, whatever, it's vaguely enough worded that they can assign the terrorism designation to anyone that they would like. That's terrifying. We will talk about that in more depth early next week. On that vein, there is another one here from commondreams.org where Stephen Miller claims simply calling Trump authoritarian incites violence and terrorism. They are taking away First Amendment rights by simply saying things like authoritarianism or calling someone a fascist or a Nazi is inciting violence and terrorism, which is something that they can hold you for or charge you with. And of course, ironically, they themselves are all over on video calling the left fascists, authoritarians, etc., etc. Okay, I know this part's old news by now, but the Trump administration linked Tylenol use to autism. And this became more of a meme than anything that said it's not funny that the Trump administration is pushing out pseudoscience. This is led out by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's the health secretary. What even is their whole purpose in doing this? Is it just a distraction? Trump called it the most epic scientific discovery or medical discovery in the history of the world or something like that. And it's just a ridiculous lie. It's been debunked multiple times. And yet it's sad to see people come out with their stories. There's people that I know in my personal life who have posted stories talking about, how their child has autism and it must have been linked to the Tylenol that they took while they were pregnant. It's harmful and it's dangerous to talk this way and to push things like this without real science backing it. Of course, this goes along with vaccines and all of the other anti-science rhetoric that the health secretary is pushing. On this note, Donald Trump also, this wasn't even one of the articles that I had in here, but Donald Trump also posted a video of himself. It was an AI video that someone else had made of a fake news anchor announcing that every hospital, every American will have access to a med bed, which is supposedly some mystical, magical, scientific discovery that can heal you and grow back your limbs. And I mean, it's a like conspiracy theory that the government has access to this technology. And he shared it and then later deleted it as if he thought that it was real and that it was something that his administration was doing and he had no idea. Again, terribly dangerous. All right, moving on to Bloomberg.com. Trump orders U.S. troops to Portland, citing anti-ICE protests. He keeps doing this where he's saying he's going to send troops to specific cities, and then he sort of backs off or he ends up sending, you know, a large number of ICE agents instead of the National Guard. And in this case, he kind of went full bore talking about how the streets of Portland are these war-ravaged locations and that it requires military to shut it down. Well, later he comes back and he says that he had a conversation with, I believe it was a congresswoman or something from Oregon, who told him that no, he was exaggerating and everything was fine. And he basically said, is what I'm seeing on the news not real? Is what I'm watching on TV not what's actually happening? He's been watching apparently like old video that Fox News is showing of Portland from 2020 during the Black Lives Matter protests and that time when things were more chaotic and there were a lot of protests, when in reality, the situation in Portland is extremely calm, you know, low key, especially compared to back then. And frankly, he just makes himself sound like an idiot. This just adds to, you know, this and the AI video thing and a few other items in the last couple of weeks. It just shows that he's out of touch with his own administration, with what he's doing. He doesn't really seem to be making decisions based on reality. He's just throwing stuff out there on a whim. He went to the UN summit in New York and basically just insulted everybody. All the UN nations, told them that their countries are going to hell, and spent most of the time complaining about the escalator that broke as he was trying to go up it, which turns out it was his own cameraman that accidentally hit the emergency stop button, and then freaking out about the teleprompter and making fun of the UN because the teleprompter didn't work, which, once again, the teleprompter is controlled by his own people. It's his delegation that's in charge of that. And in response, Fox News' Jesse Waters, this is in People.com, he calls to, quote, bomb the UN or, quote, maybe gas it after broken escalator and teleprompter during Trump's visit. You know, this coming after Fox News, Brian Kilmeade, a couple weeks ago in that episode that I did, talked about this where he says, basically, we should kill all the homeless people who refuse help. And don't get me started on the media and the direction that media is headed and the complicitness that they have in all of this. You know, I've always known that there's issues in the media, but I didn't realize how broken journalism really is and how controlled it is by, you know, the ultra wealthy who don't want people to know about certain things or for those certain things to be focused on. Speaking of which, a New York Times article talks about how in pressuring ABC over Jimmy Kimmel, Trump may have crossed a constitutional line. I think he definitely did. We're talking here about Jimmy Kimmel's show on television being forcibly removed from the air for a time due to comments that Jimmy Kimmel made about Charlie Kirk, which were frankly quite mild compared to so many of the things that had been said. It was a clear test in seeing how far the government could push news organizations or media organizations to remove things and people that they don't agree with. The FCC chair, Brendan Carr, essentially extorted them. He pushed them. He said, you know, if you don't make these, if you don't pull Jimmy Kimmel, there's going to be severe consequences. And he pressured him into it. Now, Kimmel came back a few days later, partially in response to the boycott, people canceling their subscriptions, those types of things. And I think if that really is what caused them to bring him back, then it shows what power we have as a people to move the needle from an economic standpoint. Well, this same Brandon Carr from the FCC later also admitted that Project 2025 was essentially the plan all along. Of course, Donald Trump always said he knew nothing about Project 2025, but in this MSNBC article, it talks about how Brendan Carr posted a stupid meme in response to some Twitter posts by a guy named Kevin McHale. Kevin said, the head of the FCC seems like a totally normal guy. Thanks for confirming what we already know. This was all in Project 2025, by the way. And then Brendan Carr responds with the Jack Nicholson nodding meme, as in to say, yes, we are most definitely implementing all of Project 2025. Now, it's stupid. It's a meme, right? And this government is full of memes. As a matter of fact, another article that I didn't have in here was Trump posting racist memes about Hakeem Jeffries, AI videos literally of Trump playing in a mariachi band behind Hakeem Jeffries as a mustache and a sombrero appear on him. I mean, this video, he didn't just share it on Twitter, which he did, but he also had it showing in the press briefing room as they were waiting for the press secretary to show up. The government is essentially just one big meme at the moment. Trump committed several impeachable offenses this week, one of which was directing AG Bondi to persecute his political enemies. This is in MSNBC as well. It's titled, "Why Trump's Directive to AG Bondi Should Be Seen as an Impeachment-Level Scandal." The president isn't just being accused of trying to weaponize federal law enforcement. He's now publicly flaunting his corrupt and authoritarian efforts. It was this tweet that he had sent out, which looked like it was supposed to be a communication with Pam Bondi, probably through an email. Again, a question of whether he meant to do that on purpose or not. Essentially, he was telling her, we have to go after these people. We have to go after James Comey. We have to go after my political enemies, and I want you to be the one to take them down. Which he then did. James Comey was indicted. He comes back and basically says, you know, he has a reaction to this. He says, "We will not live on our knees, and you shouldn't either. Fear is the tool of a tyrant, but I'm not afraid. I'm innocent, so let's have a trial." Just this one story would be enough to mar an entire reputation for any other president. This one story could last an entire term, right? And be something that people refer back to for years or decades. And yet, it's hardly in the news, this whole James Comey business, because there is simply just so much else that this presidency is doing. For example, declaring war on United States cities. Quote, "San Francisco and Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, we'll straighten them out one by one. It will be a major part for some of the people in this room. It's a war from within." He is referring, in this case, when he's saying for some of the people in this room, and this is when Hegseth called 800 military generals from all around the world to a meeting in which he simultaneously said nothing to them, but also dog whistled and said a lot about the type of violence he is allowing them to be able to commit. Trump's speech was unhinged. Again here, declaring war from within and telling these generals that they will have a lot to do with it, which means that what he's saying is that he intends to put American troops, not just National Guard, these are Marines and Navy, all branches of the government, and saying you will have a part in fighting our enemies within the nation. And then Hegseth's speech, my word, excuse the language here, this is from a site called Common Dreams. It was, quote, "Most loser shit I have ever seen. Pete Hegseth's unhinged speech to generals sparks instant ridicule. One critic expressed astonishment that Hegseth summoned all the U.S. generals from around the globe at great expense to fat shame them," which he did. Yeah, he talked about how it was so unacceptable to see so many fat generals and fat military members, that it was unacceptable to have dudes in dresses, was the way he put it, climate change, worship, woke nonsense, on and on and on. He basically said, we're no longer going to be following stupid rules of engagement that limit members of the armed forces, that we need to seek to kill and destroy our enemies, which Donald Trump had said were enemies from within. He told them to prepare for war. We're not a nation that defends. We're a nation that goes on the offense. When you talk about not following what he called, quote, stupid rules of engagement, it's just literally like Geneva War Convention, you know, not committing war crimes. And he's saying, we're done with that. Now, as you can imagine, I don't believe that many of these generals were happy with this situation. Imagine dedicating your entire life to a cause. And these aren't just, you know, kids who enlisted at 18. These are people who moved through West Point. They are really the cream of the crop when it comes to the military. They eat, live, breathe this. This is, you know, 40, 50, 60 years of their lives have been dedicated to this. When it comes to military, these are the professionals. And they have Pete Hegseth and Donald Trump fat shaming them, talking down to them, telling them that they're doing it wrong and that it's going to change from here on out, telling them how to do their jobs. I can't imagine any one of them felt inspired from this interaction. Okay, shifting for a second, we're going to talk about Kash Patel. A couple articles here about him. One is that he faced backlash over the ice bullet Sharpie. Look, there's been a lot of political violence in the U.S. over the last couple of weeks. We saw an attack on a Mormon church, a church for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, in which somebody entered, well, they crashed their vehicle into it. They ran in with a gun. They shot several people. They lit the church on fire. This was a large church, and the whole thing burned to the ground. Last week at an ICE facility, somebody posted up on the roof across the street, fired down into a van full of detainees and ICE agents, killed some of the detainees, and then killed themselves. And of course, it didn't take long, a number of minutes, before Kash Patel was posting images of bullet casings with, well, one of them. There was five bullets. One of them had the word anti-ICE written on it in what looks like pen or Sharpie. Now, look, I wasn't there. I didn't see what happened. I can't give a firsthand account, but it looks so stupid and so suspicious. First of all, nobody says anti-ICE. No leftist I have ever heard has referred to it that way. But of course, this is on top of the Charlie Kirk shooter and the things that were, you know, written into those bullets. Anyway, suffice it to say, people are not pleased with Patel's handling of the FBI, and it's clear to be seen that he does not hold the experience required for this level of work. Now, on top of that, one thing that he is really great at is making himself look like an idiot in front of Congress. He was grilled on several questions as he testified in front of Congress, and one of the things that he said was pretty much this. I'll quote this here. He talked about this both in that congressional hearing as well as on the news after, and this is what he said specifically on Newsmax, quote, "We have released all credible information in the Epstein case file, and there's absolutely zero credible information against Donald Trump or anyone else." Again, it's no surprise that he's going to protect Donald Trump, but to say that essentially the Epstein files, that there's nothing. We don't have anything. We have released everything that there is to release, and it's all fake. Okay, don't need to go on much further there. You understand how stupid that is. Okay, starting a couple days ago now, we've got a government shutdown underway. The right is claiming that Democrats are all to blame for this, making up lies about how the Democrats are holding the nation hostage in order to fund illegal immigrants' health care, which is not true. That's not part of the bill at all. And meanwhile, government agencies are blaming the shutdown on Democrats. This is an article in Politico, which experts say could be against the law. It violates the Hatch Act. Essentially, if you were to go to the HUD.gov website, a big flashy red banner pops up that says the violent radical leftists are holding the nation hostage in order to fund illegal immigrants' health care, blah, 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 throwing the blame on the left for all of this. When, of course, we have that quote from Donald Trump from 2013 where he talks about how any shutdown of the government is always the president's fault because it shows a lack of leadership. Jumping back real quick to the Epstein files, House Republicans frantically adjourned the session to block the 218th vote needed to force the release of the Epstein files. They were trying to swear in a new member of the House, and they purposefully delayed swearing her in to the last moment so that she could not vote on releasing the Epstein files. She was the last vote needed, and they intentionally blocked her from being able to do so. And in somewhat of a Freudian slip, perhaps, Ted Cruz is on the mic saying, "We need to stop attacking pedophiles." I believe that he meant we need to stop protecting pedophiles. It was not what he said, but it goes perfectly in line with the Trump administration's actions over the last couple of weeks. Stephen Miller held a press conference in Memphis. He said, quote, "I see the guns and badges in this room. You are unleashed. The handcuffs that you are carrying, they're not on you anymore. They're on the criminals. Whatever you need to get it done, we are going to get it done." And we are seeing that take place throughout the nation as far as ICE raids go and the posture that ICE is taking. A video just released in Portland. ICE agents in military gear are now jumping out of unmarked vans to disappear protesters. There's a lot more as far as video coming out of people being abused, hurt, laws being broken where they are raiding entire buildings, like this one, for example, in 75th Street apartment. There's an interview from ABC News where they're asking people who were involved or who were on site, saying that they were busting in, no warrants. They were detaining citizens, people who were screaming that they were citizens. The ICE agents were not asking questions. They were detaining or arresting everyone, separating children from parents, tying the children up with zip ties. First-hand reports, you know, were saying that the ICE agents were laughing about the children being tied up and taken from their parents. There are numerous people that are suing right now due to injuries sustained from attacks from ICE. There are videos of, you know, an 80-year-old man being shoved to the ground face first, breaking ribs, pushing his face into the concrete, all for, you know, asking questions and trying to advocate for his workers who were being detained and arrested. It's heating up on this front. And the last two articles that I want to talk about here are in regards to that violence. The Trump administration conjures up a new, quote, terrorist designation to justify killing civilians. And there's not a lot of details on this. They used this sort of language to justify killing of the supposed drug traffickers in Venezuela. But they alluded to the fact that they could also do this domestically and under some new terrorist designations that they have not made public. So it's almost like behind the scenes, they have created this definition for terrorist designations that they can use, again, internally to justify killings, but they have not necessarily made those known. And whether or not this is in conjunction with the NSPM 7 that I will again talk about on Tuesday is yet to be seen, but it feels like the Trump administration is making more and more headway in manufacturing consent and giving themselves permission to not just detain or arrest or disappear, but also to kill people that don't agree with him. Lastly, and I do think I'm going to do an entire episode on this next week at some point, NPR released a poll that states more Americans now agree political violence may be necessary to right the country. And this poll had a bunch of different questions in it, but the one most pertinent to this conversation, at least right now, was asked the following statement: Americans may have to resort to violence in order to get the country back on track. They were asked whether or not they agreed with that. Well, back in March of 2024, around 20% of people agreed with that statement, the majority of them Republicans. So 1 year ago, well, I guess 1.5 years ago now, 28% of Republicans agreed with that statement, where only 12% of Democrats agreed and 18% of independents. Well, that has shifted wildly. They were asked this again last month, and the overall percentage has gone from 20% to 30%. So 1 in 5 to nearly 1 in 3 people agreeing with that statement. And the number of Democrats that agreed with that statement went from 12% all the way up to 28%. And now the number of Democrats that agree with that statement almost matches the number of Republicans that agree with that statement, which are now at 31%. And independents went from 18% to 25%. So less than 1 in 5 to now 1 in 4. That is a terrifying statistic to me. 1 in 3 people say yes. In order to get the country back on track, we might need to resort to political violence or to violence in general. Now, it would be one thing if 1/3 of people felt that way and it was, you know, meant towards saving us from a violent regime, which, again, the Democrat side of that probably believes that, and many of those independents. But the Republican side of that, who are they directing their violence towards? It's not going to be towards the government at all because they back the government, right? It's towards fellow citizens. 31% of Republicans say that violence is necessary to get the country back on track. And I'll let you guess at who that violence needs to be directed towards or who they believe it needs to be directed towards. Now, on the bright side, 70% of people overall say that we should not be resorting to violence, including 69% of Republicans. So the majority, 2/3, are saying that we should not be resorting to violence, which is great to hear. But again, in just a year and a half, to see how much those numbers shifted, it is a terrifying prospect, especially as things continue to escalate. Okay, I've overdone it. I told you there was a lot to talk about this week. I'll try and do this once a week instead so that we can stay caught up. I'll end by again saying, you know I've got a global audience, and I'm not sure if this is interesting to somebody in Australia or the UK. Do you want to hear about this ever-escalating situation in the US, or does it get old? Is it tedious? Is it burdensome? Am I doing it too much? For my US audience, am I doing it enough? Is it too much for you? I want to make sure that I'm talking about things, you know, with the frequency and in the way that you want to hear it. So please provide feedback. Let me know your thoughts. Spotify allows for comments on these episodes, so feel free to leave a comment there. Reach out to me at Corey John on Reddit or email me at breakingdowncollapse@gmail.com. Okay, thanks. Have a great weekend.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.